You're listening to Money Never Sleeps Radio. In your face.
What we got here is a failure to communicate.
Oh, have I got your attention now?
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
You know what I mean?
Money to be made in a place like this.
Money never sleeps, pal.
You're crazy. Don't run when you lose. Don't whine when it hurts.
You know what it takes to sell real estate?
It takes brass.
I'm falling, and I can't get up.
All right, welcome to Money Never Sleeps. This is a show where we talk about anything and everything that impacts the flow of money from around the corner to around the world. And I want to thank you for joining us today. We're going to go over a few things during this show. Artificial intelligence is one of them. We see a lot of things going on in that space. You have everything from X to Broadcom to Amazon to OpenAI, Anthropic, all this stuff going on, the federal governments, other governments utilizing AI for their needs. And there are a lot of debates going on around it. But I'll tell you this much, that this evolution of artificial intelligence is just beginning. When you have the humanoids and all this stuff transpiring, you know, you're going to have a progression that's going to happen extremely quickly. So going in there and having some sort of regulation, you know, how's that going to work? I can't speak to that, but I know this much, that the companies that are innovators in this space, the companies that are looking at the future, they're not going and just looking at what the hype is right this moment. The ones that are actually looking to change the world in their way, these are the ones that you want to look at, because you're talking about visionaries. You're talking about individuals that may see, you know, they may not have the same viewpoints, but these companies, they are focused on what they're focused on. And I think that there's going to be a lot of activity in that space. I would just be aware and try to, kind of avoid the hype machines. When you see a company, especially a publicly traded company that is doing things in AI or doing things in the government sector. Well, not so much the government sector, but in weapons intelligence and things like that, and dealing with the government in some way, and they're constantly hyping things. You know, these type of companies you have to be aware of, in a way that, hey, you know what? Red flag, let me just back off of this, because at the end of the day, when the loudest, there's a thing in sports and in athletics, or even in the military, the loudest person in the room is the weakest person, right? They talk, or they make so much noise to get the attention, because the squeaky wheel gets the oil, right? But at the end of the day, this comes down to the utility of it all. Alright, so the companies that are providing utility, creating the infrastructure, that's a key thing. Alright, now this is a segue to infrastructure, and I'm gonna be going into the private credit markets. We did a show on this a few days ago, and I just want to continue to go on this because there's so many different developments that are happening in the private credit arena. Okay, because it's at a somewhat of a crossroads, right? You know, you have structural cracks. They're becoming evident, more and more every day you see something. You know, you have, BlackRock, Ares Management, Apollo Global, Marathon Asset. They are the dominant players in the space, and they are seeing the cracks, and they're saying that there are cracks there. Okay, the private credit market has expanded rapidly. I'm talking super, super fast, from $500 billion in the aftermath of 2008, the financial crisis, to right now it's hovering around $2 trillion globally. And look, you have a vehicle that makes sense, and it's a good vehicle. The problem is the infrastructure. The infrastructure is pretty bad, because when a company can go and borrow money from BlackRock and borrow money from another lender and double pledge the assets, that's a problem. But there's a solution for that. And if the private credit players would listen to this show, listen to what I've been saying, and even as I've spoken to them directly, they for some reason there's an opposition for them to integrate blockchain into what they're doing. You know, maybe because you have guys that are 60, 70, 80 years old running the ship. I don't know. But I know this much, that blockchain will solve their problem, and it will preserve the private credit markets, that's for sure. Because look, at the end of the day, okay, you have to look at this for what it is. It's a vehicle to provide services to companies that really can't, or the banks won't deal with them, or they can't deal with the banks. So this is a good alternative for that. You take that out of the equation, a lot of companies will fail. So they need the private credit markets to be there, and it's going to be, right now it's about $2 trillion. I think it's going to be a lot more than that, a lot more than that over the course of the next couple of years. But, you know, you have to have the infrastructure in place. That is the core weakness of the market. You know, even though, look, you have isolated losses, they're not unusual in credit markets, right? But when you have major institutional managers and they're suggesting valuation pressures and potential credit deterioration and emerging in this market, or in segments of the market, that's when you have to kind of look and say, what's going on here? Because these are early warning signals of something, okay? And again, is it the loans they're giving? Are they not vetting properly? Or is it something more? I think that transparency in this space is going to be critical, okay? The infrastructure itself, you know, is the weak point. I think that is the weak point, all right? And again, the core weak point, I believe. Okay, you know, because despite the growth in the arena, private credit remains operationally fragmented. It's relying on a patchwork system of legacy legacy ways of doing things, from loans, covenant monitoring, collateral tracking, investor reporting, yield distribution, blah blah blah. Many of these processes still depend heavily on manual reconciliation, spreadsheets, fragmented servicing platforms, probably outsourcing stuff to other parties. Come on. You know, in this day and age, this should be something that could be controlled within an institution and then reported, if need be, to regulators. Okay, this basically obscures real-time risk exposure because you really don't know. It's like that black hole. You don't know what's going on. It's like the derivative market. You don't know what's going on, right? You know, so the lack of standardized infrastructure, it creates a lot of structural vulnerabilities, delayed transparency, limited real-time collateral monitoring. You know, it's difficult to verify the asset pledges across multiple lenders because, you know, BlackRock's not talking to Ares. Ares is not talking to a smaller company that may be, you know, providing funding or a family office that may be doing something. So you see the problem? It is a problem. Again, something that can be resolved. Okay, and the inefficient distribution of payments, reporting, all that stuff is part of the issue. And double pledging, is that a massive issue? I don't think a lot of companies would go down that road because that's fraud, but I think it does happen. Okay, and weak infrastructure can allow that 7 days a week, twice on Sunday, no question, that they'll be able to do it. So, you know, you open a door for fraudsters, you got to close it tight. Okay, blockchain infrastructure is a structural solution. I've been saying this for a long time, beyond the private credit sector blowing up the way it did. I was talking about this for a long time. Okay, when you have, look, you have new blockchain-based financial infrastructure that's emerging, specifically designed to address these inefficiencies, and this is happening on the Piku Novus blockchain. You have other blockchains that may be doing it, but this is specifically happening. This is an infrastructure layer that's capable of supporting institutional-grade credit instruments directly on-chain, directly. Unlike conventional tokenization approaches, they focus on trading liquidity. The infrastructure emphasizes the credit market transparency and collateral verification. And these are key aspects to the problem in the private credit market. Okay, one product in specifically in general is the digital credit note tokens. I mean, this is a great instrument, okay, that, and let me just go over it. You know, it basically represents a tokenized credit instrument, and it can easily do that. It's backed by a verifiable collateral held within a digital asset treasury. It allows for this to be transparent. Okay, it locks that collateral in there. And the assets backing the credit issuance, they have to be pledged and locked in an escrow, not so much an escrow, but locked within that digital asset treasury. You can use an escrow aspect to it if that is what they wanted as well, but I recommend digital asset treasury and lock it all up because you can make that transparent. But once locked, these assets, they can't be reused, rehypothecated, or pledged anywhere else, period, the end. This can be shown, okay, across the whole financial industry if they wanted to. It's just a matter of saying, hey, we gave them a loan. They pledged these assets are locked. And it's just like in the banking system. When somebody has a bank account and is overdrawn and they have a problem and they go to try to open a bank somewhere else, what happens? There's a red flag over there. Same situation. A lot of people don't know about that, but they should, because they have like a joint chiefs of staff there that go and they make sure that you're not able to go and repeat the same thing somewhere else. Okay. And again, doing this, what does it do? It prevents that double pledging. It keeps things safe, you know, and the smart contract transparency, that is where it gets really interesting, because each private credit instrument can carry well over 200 programmable data points within its smart contract infrastructure. You don't get that anywhere. From collateral composition, loan maturity, yield schedule, covenant parameters, collateral coverage ratios, payment status, lender obligations, blah, blah, blah. All this stuff that's in there. And it's for the benefit of transparency, not only for the financial institution, but for their investors and even the regulators if they should see it, and even for the lender, I mean, whoever is borrowing, the borrower, they, you know, they get to see this stuff, and it's all, you know, for them. It doesn't need to be public as other things would be, but it can be within their system that they're able to show this stuff to whoever they need to show it to. Okay, and DCN tokens, you know, there's an automatic yield distribution. Every hour on the hour, it issues yield to the holder. So whoever the holder is, they're getting it directly into their wallet. Okay, and you're talking about immutable record keeping. Every event in the life cycle of the private credit instrument is permanently recorded on chain. You can't change it. So this, again, transparency, helping to protect the institutions, helping to protect their investors, and by protecting them is providing them with the information and data that they need, and then they can make their own judgment call, right? When things are opaque, when you don't know what's going on, and all of a sudden, a year later, you say, well, we're going to devalue this to zero. Okay, what happened? Then you have to go through the explanation tour, okay, explaining why and who, what, where, why, but we're this and this, and we'll make it up to you. You know, avoid that. Do something like this, because the private credit market itself is not inherently flawed for what it is. It is becoming an essential alternative to traditional bank lending. That I do believe, because as I said earlier, you have companies that can't get a loan from the bank for whatever reason. The bank, maybe their standards are different and they just can't do it. This gives them an alternative. Okay, and I made mention on the other show of it being like a loan shark type of thing. Yeah, I guess, kind of, if you were dealing with a street situation, right? But, you know, the private credit markets aren't loan sharks. They do things in an efficient way, and basically they do help a lot of companies. You know, it's a matter of getting things moving in the right direction. Now, and then there was something interesting that I'll go over at the when I finish this thought in regards to pipes. But getting back to this, the operational infrastructure that's supporting this $2 trillion market hasn't evolved at the same pace as the asset class itself. That is what the problem is. That's what the problem is. Okay, and this market, there's a need for it, so it's going to scale further and further and further. But the weakness in transparency, collateral verification, and investor reporting is becoming more pronounced. We see it now. Just look at what BlackRock, Ares, Apollo, Marathon, what they're all talking about now. You're going to see more and more news releases come out over the next several weeks. I'm telling you, they're going to be talking about whether they're devaluing, whether they're reducing dividends, blah, blah, blah. Okay, now blockchain-based financial infrastructure, it is going to modernize private credit. And again, this is happening, is layered on top of Pico Novus now, and this is the stuff that's out there now that can be utilized. Real-time transparency for investors, automated covenant and collateral monitoring, immutable collateral tracking, instantaneous yield distribution, auditable data structures, where regulator can go in or an institutional investor can go in, they can say, okay, yeah, we know we can do a full audit here and we're fine. They get the information they need. Okay, so these systems and these products that are built on the Pico Novus blockchain, they demonstrate how digital credit instruments like DCNs can bring institutional-grade transparency to a traditionally opaque market. It can be done. It comes down to them wanting to do it, and that has to do with the path forward with everything. Because as private credit continues to expand beyond this $2 trillion threshold, I mean, I think that in the coming years, you're going to see, you know, 3, 5, 10 trillion. It's going to have its place in the sun right along with the bond market and with the equity market and with the derivatives market. Okay, the next phase of the industry will likely, you know, depend less on the capital availability and more on the infrastructure. Because without the infrastructure, you're going to collapse. You can't build a house on quicksand. Okay, without a proper foundation, what do you have? And the crazy thing is, this foundation is here. They just need to want to use it. Institutional investors, they're increasingly demanding a few things, you know, clearer collateral verification, standardized reporting, automated servicing, verifiable transparency, and a few other points. Again, all resolved with blockchain-based credit instruments. Okay, and again, it comes down to digital credit note tokens. It comes down to this layer of financial product infrastructure that is on the Pico Novus blockchain. This is key. This is key. So in a market where yield is abundant but transparency is really, really scarce, the evolution of infrastructure, well, that's going to determine whether the private credit market scales as it should or not. Okay, and I wanted to, now I'm going to go into what I was going to say at the conclusion, you know, this is the conclusion of this show, in regards to pipes, all right? You have pipes that, you see this all the time, especially in the nano and the micro cap market. You have companies that will go and you know, a firm, an investment bank or a private credit player, they'll go and do a pipe with a publicly traded company that may be on the NASDAQ, okay, or even on New York's Stock Exchange American, and they'll do that. And the way they do it, they have warrants, they have sweeteners, they have all this stuff attached. And I mentioned this on another show last week, I believe. But they do that stuff, and what winds up happening is that those companies, they wind up being behind the eight ball. You know, and they're doing this, they think that they're getting a nice influx of funds coming into the company. But at the end of the day, what winds up happening is that they're sitting there and the companies don't realize it. They're sitting there and they're going to choke on what they did because this is toxic debt. And it can dilute investors across the board. It can really, you know, screw them up in a big way. One interesting thing that I did see, and it was really, really interesting, where a company went, and the company escapes me, but it was really interesting. They actually did a pipe. They did a pipe, right, which, and I believe it was, I'm going to say, okay, I forget. It was, I forget the company. Anyway, what they wound up doing, they wound up doing a $1 billion pipe. I believe BlackRock helped them with it, or Goldman helped them with it, and they got it done. But the pipe was specifically for them to buy back stock in their company. Brilliant. Because by taking stock out of the public's market, you are increasing the value of the stock itself, of what's out there, what's outstanding. Okay, so it becomes a very interesting dynamic, and that is a great use of a pipe. You know, but when a company is using a pipe to go and utilize it for their working capital, and I've seen this recently, where a company's doing this, and they are dependent, and like they may have to go pay this back in a year, year and a half, and they're paying monthly payments into it. If the company is not going to be generating revenue, they will hit a brick wall, and that brick wall is going to hurt. Because not only did that lender, are they owed their money, they probably, let's say they did it at a zero coupon. That's fine. They'll do that. It'll be a discounted loan. So if you took out a $20 million, you know, loan from them, and they did that pipe with you, you know, you may have just gotten, you know, or if you did a $30 million or even a $10 million, whatever it is, you know, you may have gotten a fraction of that. You may have gotten, you know, maybe, let's say if it was 10, maybe you got, you know, 6 or 7 in that range, and then you have all of your fees and whatever else is attached there, and then you wind up going down that road. And again, you have payment, schedule that you have to adhere to, or you'll be in default. They have crazy warrants that a lot of them get. They get some rights. They get a lot of different things. At the end of the day, it's not a good deal for shareholders, because they get diluted one way or the other. But I just wanted to mention the pipes, because I thought the pipes, it was with Pinterest, I believe. So that pipe that was done there for them to buy back that stock makes everything really interesting for them. And it's actually a good vehicle in that respect for shareholders. Okay, now I said my piece about private credit, about pipes, and that's about it for this episode of Money Never Sleeps. I'll be with you for the next episode, and I want to thank you again for tuning in and taking time to hear what I have to say, and I hope that this has been informative in some way to the listeners out there. All right, anyway, thank you very much for tuning in, and I want you guys to have a fantastic trading day, and we'll be back with you with another episode of Money Never Sleeps.
Initiating shutdown sequence.
You're listening to UCW Radio, in your face.
What is your major malfunction?
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on Money Never Sleeps Radio are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as financial advice. The host Louis Velazquez and guests of Money Never Sleeps Radio are not licensed financial advisors, and any investment decisions made based on information presented in this podcast are at the listener's own risk. Listeners are encouraged to consult with a qualified financial advisor or investment professional before making any investment decisions. The podcast hosts and guests do not endorse or recommend any specific investment strategies or products. All investments involve risk, and past performance is not indicative of future results.